This is Jan Melling and Caroline Lewis from the Oral History Group Arundel Museum. The date today is Monday, the 30th of May, 2022, and the time is 2 p.m. We are doing this interview in the curatorial room at Arundel Museum, and we are interviewing Mr. Richard Batt and Anne Martin. Batt spelt B-A-T-T, and Anne is spelt with an E. And the interview is for Life During the Pandemic Project. Thank you very much for coming. Could you, Anne, could start off with you, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you've ended up living in Arundel?
Okay. I have lived in Arundel for about 22 years. I moved here after I divorced. I worked in Arundel at both Cubitt and West and Sims Williams. Do you want date of birth? 6/4/47.
That's fine. So, Richard, could you tell us about how you've ended up living in Arundel?
Yes, my son got a job. My oldest son got a job in at Dunsfold Park near Cranleigh. And then his company moved to Littlehampton. Myself and my wife were looking for a retirement property somewhere in a sort of banana shape on the map from Bedford all the way around to Gloucester. And when we realised the journey that he had to make after the company moved to Littlehampton, backwards and forwards to Cranleigh every day, we found a house in Arundel that we purchased in Penfold's Place, and my son lived in it for 3 years before we moved in.
Okay, thank you. The project is about COVID and coping with it. The first question I'd like to ask you is, can you tell me about the first time, start with Richard, first time you heard about COVID, and what were your thoughts at the time?
That question has two parts for me, because I now know I heard about COVID 3 months before the news heard about COVID. My son went to a wedding in the December and was on a table with a couple that had come in, flown in from China to be at the wedding. And a week later, my son was really poorly, and then my daughter-in-law, and then their two children. Now, we assume now that they all had COVID, because they're not poorly enough to need the doctor, so they've got a bad case of the flu. So we all assume now that they'd had that. Now, the first time I heard of it officially was literally on the news on the television when they said that there's this disease that is starting to make its way around the world. But of course, I'm sure I sat there like most people and thought, it's going to be a bit of a fuss about something that is relatively straightforward and will be gone in a few months.
And could you ask you the same question? When did you first hear about it?
Television, news, and again, you think, oh, it sounds a bit like the plague. It can't possibly be in this day and age. And then I thought, when Boris said lockdown for, what was it, 3 weeks or something, I thought, oh, great, I can get all the jobs I wanted to get done and out of the way, because we wouldn't have a social life. So, we were ever so busy, weren't we? Everything that didn't move got painted and repaired and what have you. So, and just couldn't believe it when it just carried on and on and on. So.
Okay. And perhaps, Richard, may I ask you if you could explain how life changed for you personally when lockdown was announced?
In actual fact, I don't think it did change for me a great deal, because newly retired, fortunate that I was in a position where, as long as I was careful, I didn't feel that it was going to impact upon me at all. I walked a lot, so I could still do that. I know we were supposed to be we were supposed to be confined to houses, but I felt a walk in the country was okay. It might be breaking the rules, but I wasn't meeting anybody, wasn't talking to anybody. So I felt so from that point of view, I don't think my life and I don't think our life altered that much, other than, and that's not to diminish it, but other than the fact that you could no longer meet your children, you could no longer meet your grandchildren. That was huge, I think, especially as when it hit, my youngest grandchild was a year old. Would that be right? 6 months.
Mm-mm.
6 months. And that meant that whereas with my slightly older grandchild, you had those formative years, that I missed those. So I can definitely say that I don't know my youngest grandchild, who is 3 in a couple of weeks, the way I know her elder brother, who's 2 years older. And, you know, he had a sort of two and a half year run where we were mostly meeting up 3 times a week, you know, going to the park, climbing, all that sort of thing. And I think that was a major loss.
Thank you. And perhaps, would you explain how life changed for you personally?
Well, the social life with friends and family went by the board, but Zoom came into its own. We had cocktail parties on Zoom, didn't we? We had quizzes on Zoom. So that was a saviour. We did get into jigsaw puzzles that I've never done before and probably will never do again.
No, we did. I think we were slightly addicted to those.
We were waking up thinking of jigsaw puzzles.
But they're a specific type of jigsaw. They are like cartoonish characters, aren't they? But the jigsaw is not how you imagine a jigsaw to be. So it's not a view. What you might be looking at is a cafe. And the jigsaw in the box is going to be what happens
next.
So you see the picture and you've got to work out what actually then happens. So you have to look for clues. So in one of them, it's a young boy with a whammo ball who's just about to throw the ball. So you think, well, that's going to break a window. Then
they're called jigsaw backers.
Yeah. So there is like a detail, and some of them you look at the picture, and in the middle of the picture, say, is a man. Well, the jigsaw is what that man can see, and he's looking behind you.
The river's complicated.
So what you're actually looking at isn't what's in the box. So they're really good. They're addictive. They really are addictive, because I'd never done ages.
But we have broken the habit.
We've stopped doing it, didn't we? Yeah, I mean, it was a case of needs must, I think.
And can I just ask the question in regards to, you know, moving houses and making that decision? Because you said earlier on that perhaps you had to sort of move into one house rather than as you are now.
We did go back to Richard's house. Check on it once a week, make sure it was all right. But we spent most of the time in my house, in the causeway. Yeah.
So I think COVID was one of those, was a facilitator, COVID, and it just made us focus on what was important and what we wanted to do, and we knew we wanted to live together. So it was the final. I don't like to use the word push, but it was the thing that said, well, if you're going to do it, you've got to do it now because of the situation we find ourselves in. And, of course, I was very fortunate in that we could walk along the river to my house.
We could walk between the houses.
We didn't have to bump into anybody. We didn't have to meet anybody. So
you formed your bubble, basically, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And can I ask how important your friends and neighbours have been during this time?
Well, to all intents and purposes, we formed a bubble with Marion and Alan Webb, as they're my neighbours. And, of course, they're your good friends from years and years and years. So the four of us became as near to a bubble as you can get. But I think
we still only met outside Oh, yeah, sort of thing. We didn't.
No, we would meet them in their garden.
Yeah.
But I think if anything, I ended up being in greater contact with like colleagues and players that I looked after from the Midlands, which is where I was based. That became a greater contact, but obviously Zoom, phone, than before, because.
So this is how the technology was playing.
And I think it also put me in a position where I needed to make the effort. And I suppose, like, not to generalise too much, but like a lot of men, when everything was comfortable, I didn't really make the effort. And then suddenly I'm sat there thinking, what am I going to do this afternoon? I thought, I could ring Paul Hodgson. And I'm sure Paul Hodgson was most likely the other end. He couldn't be bothered either. And then, so I struck up, well, it renewed friendships is the best way to describe it. That they came out, but obviously they couldn't be face to face. So that, I think that was a case of one door shuts, another one opens.
But also we had the time to reconnect with people yeah. because...
Well, after we finish your garden and your house.
Well, yes. It's looking wonderful. it was good that we had the time. In fact, in a way, I was a little bit disappointed when things did begin to open up because we used to come out for a walk and we saw this grandfather with his grandson. The grandson was tiny, cycling down the hill. Never would he have been able to do it. Would not see that since.
That is my vision. That's the image that I will store of COVID in Arundel, was the grandfather with the two children. So next biggest directly behind him, little one at the back, coming straight down the middle. No traffic. And he's talking to them. They're doing their hand signals. And I stood on the bridge and I watched them come through. And I thought, you couldn't do that ordinarily. It would be impossible. And I thought those kids are going to remember that forever.
My daughter and her family live on the other side of Arundel. So that they come up the Ford Road through the town and everything. And they were cycling, which they can't do normally.
They would come into your back garden and we would stay in the kitchen and...
We'd talk through the door. But the fact that they could do it, it was like being back in the 50s.
Sorry.
That was cruel.
I know, but it had to be done.
Yeah. But it was, the roads were so quiet, it was lovely.
Yeah.
It
was a slower pace of life, wasn't it?
I mean, we got deliveries, Sainsbury's and Tesco's deliveries, so you didn't have to go out. I saved a fortune during this time too.
I don't know whether this is the right place to say this, but obviously we sat and watched the news in the evenings and you know, it was we say all this fun stuff, but it was horrendous. It was terrible. I didn't believe that in sort of 2021 I just didn't believe it, that we could be in this position. And when they started building the emergency hospitals and you suddenly thought, oh, this is seriously, seriously real. I think we both reacted to that, didn't we? We found it upsetting, and
well, I had a friend who became ill during COVID, and because the doctors weren't to be seen or heard, she subsequently died. And she'd had breast cancer, had treatment for it, slowly got over it, but wasn't right. But you couldn't get to see a doctor. And she had 12 days between getting the diagnosis and dying. And if she'd been seen earlier, because it was obviously secondary cancer, and she just didn't get the treatment. No. So, I mean, that's one thing I am cross about, the medical profession. I mean, my father was a doctor, so I'm appalled that they, and still are, hiding behind COVID. I mean, you go up there, in fact, I was up at the surgery this morning having a blood test, and you still have to wear your masks. It's probably the only place anybody with COVID doesn't go, because you're told if you've got COVID, don't go to the surgery. So it's probably the cleanest and purest place. And yet they just didn't strike a blow. And I do get very hot under the collar about this. So it's wrong. Dentists were working. Once we had the, you know, all systems go sort of thing. Anyway.
No, that was an experience we were thinking of asking you if you'd known somebody that had suffered with COVID. Mm. And did this person, did they stay at home all this time, or did they go into hospital?
They went into hospital for the operation, the breast cancer operation, but then they came home and kept complaining of stomach pains and everything. And but they seemed to think, oh, it's irritable and bowel, it's this, it's that. Now, to my mind, if somebody's had cancer recently and wasn't well, the first thing I would look at is secondaries. But they didn't until literally 12 days before she died. And she was exactly the same age as me, which hit home a bit hard. And I'm really cross about it, to be honest, because I think so many people put themselves out there and in danger, and yet our local GP practice didn't strike a blow. So I could go on, but I won't.
Can I just take you back then? So early on in the pandemic, what would be a typical day for you early on, because you mentioned about decorating and things like that?
Yes, well, we'd get up, we'd have breakfast, go for a walk, then come back and I'd put him to work.
we would get up, make our way downstairs to have a cup of tea, and you would find yourself sat at the dining room table with the jigsaw, thinking, well, oh, I'll just do a couple of bits. And then that's at 7 o'clock. And then at 9:15, you'd think,
a couple of bits.
I really ought to start, because it did become ridiculously addictive, didn't it? But yes, we were got up at the same time that we would have done otherwise. Always watch the news. Put weight on. I put on a stone during COVID.
But we were busy around.
It was the 11s that did it.
But we were busy doing things around the house and the garden.
Yes, I don't think we ever.
That was predominantly
There was always a lot to do. There was that opportunity to do all those things that you always promised yourself you would do, but you never quite got around to it.
Was the initial lockdown? Was it 6 weeks, he said?
I can't remember.
But that's why there was such a panic to get everything done, because I thought, I'm going to run out of time. Get up, get on. But then it went on.
I don't think either of us were prepared for the first few months of it, and then it started to I assumed it would be a very slow, long tail, and that would be it. It never occurred to me that I was watching a documentary on TV and there was a lady professor who was obviously highly regarded, and she said, well, usually with this type of infection, there are four peaks. And I thought, oh, so this is just, we're on the lull before the storm again. And, of course, the next peak was way bigger. So I think we were both a little bit taken aback with that, weren't we?
Yes, and, you know, the grandchildren, as you say, are growing up all the time and you're not getting to see them apart from at a distance.
That was difficult.
Yes, really towards the end, I was really desperate to have a cuddle with both of them. And the other two, my other two grandchildren, live up in Ashington, and they'd been living out in Dubai. So as soon as COVID hit, my son lost his job out there, and you can't live out there if you haven't got a job. So they all came home. So I thought, oh, that's great, but of course, couldn't see them.
That's an interesting point there, actually, because when they came home, they had to quarantine. So we moved to my house so that they could come into Anne's house, and they were there a fortnight quarantining before
all their luggage
arrived. So they were in your house for a fortnight, weren't they?
Yes.
And we went, and so that we didn't break any rule. I suppose we broke a tiny rule out of necessity. We just swapped from that house to my house, but we still had no contact with them. Mm.
Okay. Because I think probably my next question is were you pleased when the vaccination became available?
I know you must have done anything political to do with something like this, but Boris, I grew up in Henley-on-Thames, and Boris was our, I don't know whether he was our MP or our candidate, but he was quietly asked to go and be a candidate somewhere else in Henley, and they decided he wasn't. So I've always regarded him as a bit of a bumbler and a bit of a, but obviously, as far as I'm concerned, one thing that he absolutely got bang on is the lady professor that he employed and said, put a team together and get off around the world, and let's not worry if the stuff doesn't work. Get it paid for, and we'll see what we've got. When I think how many lives that must have saved. It must have saved hundreds of thousands. It must have done. And so I think there we were waiting. And I know I had a huge sense of relief when I got called for my first vaccination. A huge sense, because I think everybody was worried about catching it, weren't they? And of course, having since been vaccinated, I have caught it, but I wasn't poorly in the slightest.
And it was funny because it was after lockdown when you caught it. And had you had two vaccines?
I think I had two, yeah.
And we went to this wedding, and four of us in the car. And the only one who had it was...
Yeah, I caught it at the wedding somehow. And yet the four of us, which is the Webbs, the four of us had eaten together.
Travelled together.
Travelled together in the same car. And yet I caught COVID from somebody. And you were all okay, weren't you?
Yeah.
So, but I was poorly for a day, but that was after two. That was after two vaccinations. So for me, I think that vaccination has been a marvellous thing, and certainly anybody's, you know, if they dish out OBEs and CBEs and things, if there are people who are involved in the creation of that, you know, they're the sort of people who, as opposed to, this is a little political, a civil servant who just gets to a particular post and gets one automatically for doing his job. Whereas I think these people, I mean, they made a massive difference, absolutely. I dread to think where we'd be without the vaccination programme.
Can we, and ask you then, when we sort of came out of lockdown, you know, the rule of six, when it was a bit more freer with masks, etc., could you describe what it was like and what you did on that first day when you had that freedom. Did you go anywhere specifically or do anything specifically?
No, I seem to remember we went out for a coffee in Arundel.
I can't remember that far back. Last week, I seem to remember.
I seem to remember we went to Motton Bailey.
Did we?
Yeah.
I honestly...
Oh, no, hang on. We didn't go to Motton Bailey because when that was lifted, Motton Bailey were right at the tail end of their refurb because they used it, as we had done, they used it as an opportunity to redecorate and things. And I don't think they opened on that first day.
So it must be somewhere else.
But no, we didn't. I can remember coming down and sitting because I quite like your benches on the other side of the road opposite the museum. and I quite like to sit there sometimes, just watch the world go by, just watch the, you know. And I can remember sitting there thinking, but
if I
can
stay here long enough, I won't have to have another job thrown at me.
I can also remember thinking that was it now. So not just, I mean, great, that was it medically, but also that little sort of cocoon that we'd been in was now no longer going to be there, and we were going to be back in the real world, and we were going to head back to where we'd been just before it started. And I can remember not really looking forward to that, thinking actually there were some really good bits that came out of that. Horrendous as it was, we'd come back to the year 2022 as opposed to 1950 is how it felt for me, and I wasn't absolutely certain. It would have been nice if we could have just got everybody well but stayed
back in the
1950s.
Yes, I felt the intrusion. The outside world was coming back in, and I actually had quite enjoyed.
But we were very fortunate in that we were both in a situation where, you know, it didn't really affect our lives. You know, we didn't have concerns about, as a lot of people did, concerns about their income, concerns about how they were going to, you know, feed their families, clothe their families. We didn't have any of those concerns. So from that point of view, we look at it from a sort of rose-tinted type thing, whereas, I mean, it there must have been a lot of people that it was absolute. And, of course, we didn't really lose anybody. Though, I mean, no. Obviously you lost a close friend. But then families...
But that wasn't from COVID.
No.
So.
No, but... You know, families, the pictures of people looking through windows at hospitals and old people's homes where...
Especially now when you know what's
people,
going on.
You know,
on.
People were in their last days. Yeah. And I do feel that when there is the sort of great governmental review, as I'm sure there will be, of what happened... I do think that whoever made that decision right at the start of it all to move people out of hospital beds and put them into old people's homes, I think obviously for me that was a massive error, but of course I didn't have to make the decision. You know, I can sit here and think that was a bad decision, but I didn't have to make it. So
there were lots of terminology, wasn't there, during lockdown?
I was not a big fan of Mr. Van Damme's football analogies. I really wasn't.
Was there any terminology that really annoyed you in some ways? You know, this.
Well, I think there were a few things that people started to say and they started to do that irritated me, but I can't for the life of me think of one now. But there undoubtedly were some, and words that I'm sure existed before, but I'd certainly never come into contact with them. But yes, I did have trouble with Mr. Van Damme's football analogies. You know, we're deep into the second half. I had real problems with that.
Well, I think you would, yes, the community projects. I mean, was there anything that you were involved in as we were coming out of that first lockdown and other things that were happening with the community?
Certainly on Penfolds, the people who lived on in Penfolds Place were all very mindful, I think, of their neighbours. And there was a lot of sort of meeting in the street, and saying, you know, have you been to so and so's at number 22, and are they all right? And I think that was true of the people in the causeway around the back.
Yes, we all share a back road for parking behind our houses, and you know, you could all check that everybody was all right. And I mean, there are one or two, well, the mixed age group there, so you check if anybody needed anything.
There was a lady on Penfolds who I won't name her. You will know her, but I won't name her. But I said to her one day, right, now look, put a list on your gate and I'll go and do your shopping. I said, don't worry about the money. We'll worry about that later on. Don't worry about that. We'll do that. And she said to me, well, I was going to ask you if I could do your shopping. So I thought, oh, right, okay.
So that's a community.
Yeah. So she was thinking.
I mean, yeah. The causeway where I am, we're quite a close community.
I think everybody got much closer during COVID, and I think they did in Penfolds.
Because we've always had an annual sort of meal together in the garden in the summer. So there are always about 20 of us, perhaps a few more, 24, 25. It's all the people who share the back driveway. So we all get together for lunch every year.
But I think we have
drinks and coffee at other times.
I think everybody became much more day-to-day supportive. You know, that if you knew you were heading off to Tesco's, you know, you just ask people who were around, you know, do you need anything from Tesco's while I'm... Yeah. So from that point of view, I think it did bring...
I think also the fact that I had the dog, who's no longer with us, but... I had the dog, so that got you out. You had to take the dog for a walk.
We didn't know anybody who sort of battened the hatches down and said, but we didn't personally know anybody who did that, did we?
No, but as a dog walker, you'd offer to walk somebody else's dog, that sort of thing, to help out if you could. But no, ours has been quite a close-knit community anyway, and actually they should all be helping me because I'm the second oldest there now, so they should be all beating a path to my back door saying, can we do anything?
You mentioned media, you mentioned the news. Can you tell me what media you listened to or heard or watched?
Are we essentially still good old-fashioned BBC? Mm-hmm. Main news bulletins, yeah. No, I've not branched out into online. Is it? I've not branched out. No, it's good old fashioned BBC, and right or wrongly, and I'm sure there's a lot of Labour politicians who would say I'm completely and utterly wrong. I still regard the BBC as if what they tell me is true. I still do. So. I might be wrong.
You could well be.
Is there any aspect of the pandemic, now we're coming out reasonably fully, that is positive? What would you list as the positive things in the pandemic?
Oh, the positives that I think exist, I could be wrong, but I think exist, are... With the vaccinations and developing the drugs, that from what I understand, things that used to take 5, 6, 7 years can now be done in like a year. Well, I think that's a massive. Whatever the arguments might be, why it took so long before, but if government has has managed, and the industry has managed to organise it so that we can now respond within a year, I think that's absolutely fantastic, because I think one can only assume that this will happen sooner or later. This will happen again. It might not be COVID, but it will happen again. It might not be in our lifetimes, but it will. And I think the world will be better prepared for when it does happen. And I think that in itself is a massive thing. Because I think the impression I get is that it's brought scientists together from all over the world who are possibly less money orientated now, and more, you know, we need to be ready. We need to be.
And what would you say were the positive things, either personally or?
Not sure. Oh, Richard, of course. Very positive.
Shame you had to be prompted.
I can't think offhand, sorry.
That's okay. I would say the government, I think we've talked a little bit about it, but perhaps if you could share your thoughts on local leaders and central government and how they've responded to the pandemic.
That's a really difficult thing to a question to answer, because we were in as good a position as you could be to weather the storm without too much stresses. I don't know that we had that much sort of day-to-day contact with local, but I know that I came across in the magazine. I'm afraid I can't remember the name of it now, the group of people who had formed a group to pick people up, take them to hospital, go and do. And then when I got COVID, and they phoned, because I registered everything I was supposed to do, and they phoned me and they said, right, somebody phoned me and said, have you got enough food? Have you got this? Because there's a local group that will go and get you some food, go and do you some shop. And I didn't expect that. I thought, oh, you know, that I didn't need it, and said, no, fine, thank you very much, I'm fine. But I thought, oh, well, that somebody's got that organised. Now, my suspicion is that was all done on a voluntary basis, and that somebody somewhere said, we'll set a group up. So I don't know whether it was a national thing, but it certainly existed in Arundel.
Because I think it was the churches.
Well, there we go. It was offered to me. So I think that, yes, I think there are a lot of people from whatever area, church, whatever, who were really, well, getting
so
stuck in.
Positive.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's really good. And I'm sure there are a lot that I know absolutely nothing about.
I feel the town council could have done a bit more to push the surgery into doing more for the town. Initially, we weren't given anywhere to go and have our vaccinations. It was it took a long time before they signed the patients from the local surgery up, and we were going all over the place. I had my first two in Brighton. You were Bognor. An elderly friend who was in her 90s had to go to Bognor, which was the most unsuitable venue for it. I mean, to get 90-year-olds up to the second floor with a small lift that only held one, possibly two, and to try and explain to them that they weren't allowed to be in contact with each other. And it was a nightmare. And the surgery here, I feel, would have been ideally suited for it, because you could go in one way, have your jab, out the other end. We've got a cathedral that had all the space in the world, and you could have gone in and out the other end. So I feel the town council could have done something to facilitate that. They just sat back and did nothing. And I know they're only a parish council, they're not really a town council, but I feel they perhaps they could have got onto the district council to push things, but we were very late in getting our vaccinations. And we were all over the place. Some people were going to Midhurst, Crawley, and it was ridiculous, just because the surgery hadn't put us in anywhere. But it's quite challenging to take 90 plus to Bognor. I don't know what else they could have done.
Has your experience transformed how you think about your life in the future?
Yes, go on, as many holidays as possible.
I am far more conscious now, far more conscious. About a statistic that came out with all this was just how many I get the flu jab, and just how many people. It was like 10% the normal rate of people who had flu in the last 2 years. Well, yeah, now, the only reason that can be is that they avoided the flu bug, and that's got to be the face masks, the washing of hands. So I think it brought home to me that a lot of these things, getting them and not getting them, is in your hands. Well, quite literally, in your hands sometimes. And so that's made me far more wary now of, I go through doors, certain doors, with my elbows. I don't open
and it's
the
like
door.
Handrails.
I don't touch handrails now, whereas before I would have used a handrail. Yeah, and I open the doors with my elbows. I don't touch them if people have been touching the doorknobs. So it has modified how I would approach things now. And whereas before I might have shared, somebody might say, "What do you think of this drink?" And I might have shared a glass. I wouldn't do that now. Yes, yeah, so I'm most likely doing what I should always have done now, but for years didn't. But yes, I'm far more conscious of what can I do to reduce my risk of. So I still wear my face mask occasionally, and I move away. If somebody's stood near me and they're coughing, I think a lot of people like have modified their and I know because we've had a couple of instances where even with all the new regulations, you know, if we've got a bit of a cold or a bit of a and we've got a social event, we don't go. We think, well, we won't take it. And I went to a drinks do long ago, and there was a chap there who was coughing and spluttering, and I thought, you shouldn't be here. You should make that decision yourself that, right, you know, I don't know what this is I've got, but nobody's going to thank me for passing it on. I need to stay at home. So I think I'm certainly far more tuned in, and I think generally people are.
Yes, I think now we're back with the grandchildren.
Yeah.
We're in danger of picking things up again.
Yeah.
Having all the colds I used to catch were through the little dears.
And then you mentioned holidays.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a camper van, so we are going off, hopefully, to France in a fortnight's time. This has been cancelled or postponed twice before, so we're hoping
due
this
to
is
COVID.
third time.
We bought our camper van, and on the day we took ownership of it, I literally drove it to the lockup, parked it, and then COVID hit the next day.
Yes,
and we didn't get access to it for 12 weeks.
It was quite a time. And then, of course, the battery was flat.
Anyway. And, oh, dear. And, of course, we didn't know anything worked because we'd forgotten everything we'd been told at the... So it's been a bit of a disaster, hasn't it?
But we are hoping in a fortnight's time
We've made the decision to take more holidays. And
so we did go to Portugal last year.
Yeah.
When it was open, but that all that COVID, you know, paperwork was a bit of a performance. But the company we went with dealt with it very well. I think that's about the only thing that puts one off going now, isn't it? All the paperwork.
Yeah.
But that has eased up.
Yeah.
No,
I think travel, it will slowly get back to normal, and we've sort of made a policy decision, haven't we, to not, if we think about something, not just sit there mulling it over, but go and do it.
But of course, in a camper van, we are fairly isolated. Not isolated, but
well, you can be as isolated as you choose, can't you? So.
Fun finally, can I just ask if you'd like to share any stories about the pandemic experience that you had that you think might be of some interest to anyone?
Do you know?
You've gone blank.
Isn't that
you?
Amazing?
Yes.
That's amazing, isn't it? I can't think of a story.
Can you tell us about the cyclist down the hill?
It was granddad, who I've seen around town. So he obviously lives here, and the grandchildren were obviously staying with him. It was lovely, and it's my image of COVID and the lockdown. Mm. It really is. But it was also funny because Grandad had obviously decided that everything had to be done as it was on your cycling proficiency test. So he had got his multicoloured jacket on, bright fluorescent. He'd got his hat on, he'd got his gloves on, and he was on a really tall sit up and beg bike. And then I should think the next child was about 12, and then the next child would be about 7, and they'd got all the gear on as well, which just struck me as slightly humorous, given that they were the only people on the road. you didn't really need a high-vis jacket, because it was sort of 11 o'clock in the morning, you were the only people on the road. But it was lovely because they did a little loop, so they came down the hill, and then at the little roundabout they did that loop. So they come back into the marketplace, and then they came back out again and over the bridge, and of course they were all putting their arms out to turn left and right, and I watched them come over the bridge and then go off up the causeway, and it was the only word I can think of was it was delightful.
It was, yeah.
I thought granddad, has had an opportunity to do something that will stick with him the day that he took those grandchildren on the road. And they were obviously out for the day.
It was every day, yeah.
They it was every day. They came past the house every single day. I thought, isn't that lovely?
Mm. No, it's good, yeah.
You mentioned the 1950s. Can you remember the things now that...
It was just the quietness of everything that I enjoyed. You know, there were no aircraft going over. Mind you, I shouldn't say that because both my children are in aviation, so it was their jobs on the line. But everything was so much quieter, which was it was lovely, wasn't it? I almost resented coming out of lockdown.
Yes. We walked back from my house one day in Penfold. So we came back along the river, and of course you got across the road, and
the bridge.
You got across the bridge, and so
on the A27.
We walked up onto the bridge, and as we got to the apex of the bridge, I looked left and right, and there was not a car, not one car, and we ambled across the road, but didn't bother to go straight across. We just strolled down the middle of the road, and I thought, you'll never do this again.
Given that it's
been sheer.
But should I not have mentioned the bypass?
It's just a striking thing, and the quietness of it, and everything was just I feel slightly bad saying that it was that nice, because there were so many people having horrendous times. Really horrendous times, and I'm sure there were people in Arundel who were having horrendous times. But if you were retired and you could hang around outside, it was beautifully quiet. You could hear the birds. I'm sure wildlife prospered.
Yes.
You know, go for a walk along the river, and in a lot of ways, which sounds absolutely madness, but it was idyllic, wasn't it?
Was there anything you missed in the sense of you couldn't go there or you couldn't do that or...?
No, other than the grandchildren.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I honestly don't think there was, because you'd got the shopping was done via Sainsbury's deliveries.
Yeah.
You know, and what troopers they were, the delivery guys. Cool, they worked hard, didn't they? Because they were in a, you know, carrying huge amounts of food in a terrible rush.
I do feel it's just another nail in the coffin of the high street. You know, you go to Chichester or Worthing now, and then they've lost it, sort of thing. It's sad. And even Arundel's got empty shops. And
I don't know if this is pertinent at this point, but I had never purchased anything from Amazon. Never. Nothing. I didn't even know until my eldest son was doing something to my television that I had an Amazon account. I didn't know I had.
He's now their best customer.
And now I buy everything from Amazon. I'm just straight on the phone and I bought it. So my shopping behaviour has swapped, and it swapped 100%. I've gone from never... But like 2 months before COVID, I had never bought anything on Amazon at all. Nothing whatsoever. And now I've bought everything on Amazon. Mm. Except, of course, underwear, because you've got to go to Marks and Spencer's.
You can get them delivered. no, I mean, the thing I've struggled with is clothes. Buying clothes, because all the independent shops have gone, is just chains, and buying online is, you know, it's back and forth. But
I think high streets were struggling. I think before they were beginning to struggle.
Yeah,
you know, they were outdated. The department store was outdated concept. They were, and I think COVID has just finished them off. And never to come back.
Thank you very much.